Hello, my name is Cesar Saldana, and I am the host of Sunny Sports Podcast. For the last couple of weeks, I have been writing an article about the NCAA passing the historic name, image, and likeness law that allows student athletes to get paid. So, as a journalist that covers sports, this event was unprecedented, especially when considering some important factors. For many student athletes, college is the big time, the biggest stage their talents will take them to. In fact, fewer than 2% of NCAA students make it to the professional level. On top of the dismal chances of ever making it to the pros and getting paid, student athletes are also left to live with little to no time for a job to help pay for tuition, books, and other life expenses. NCAA surveys found that student athletes spend on average 30 to 44 hours a week on their sport. You add this to all the responsibilities and pressures of being a regular college student, such as classes, assignments, tests, etc. And it's clear that student athletes deserve more than a couple of scholarships and grants that other college students receive anyway. But student athletes have not been allowed to receive any type of financial compensation. While the NCAA has been benefited handsomely from student athletes, in fact, the NCAA is a multi-billion dollar organization whose revenue surpassed $1 billion in 2018. Colleges have also profited billions of dollars from student athletes over the last century. Since 1906, student athletes have been a constant source of unpaid income for the NCAA and colleges while putting their bodies, dreams, and futures online. On this podcast episode, I will include my interview with Cal State University of Northridge Associate Athletic Director Sharif Amer about his thoughts on the new NIL law for college athletes and how it has and will affect athletes' athletic policies and more. So let's get right into it.
Personally, how do you feel about the decision to allow college athletes to receive financial compensation?
So professionally, so my background is in compliance, right? I've done compliance for over 9 years at three different schools. And it felt like this is something that, it was a long time coming. There's a lot of attention on the money-making aspect of name, image, and likeness, but I think another thing that that came from the rule passing was there were a lot of like these really kind of silly violations for students kind of doing innocent things. Like I remember years ago, I had a student at the school that I was working at who her mom owned a flower shop, and she like posted on her, Facebook, like, "Hey guys, my mom's flower shop is doing a sale this weekend, and would love for you guys to stop by," and like promoting the store, and then that was a violation, right? So like, I like that name, image, and likeness is getting rid of things like that. I like that student athletes are able to profit off of the use of their name, image, and likeness right now, especially because they have so much visibility. Overall, I think it's a positive. But there are definitely some negatives that come along with it too. But I think overall, the positives outweigh the negatives. That's professionally. Personally, I think it's just the way of the world. So I mean, I think it's open it up, and I think it's all fine,
Okay, in terms of professionally, like you said, there's like some negative aspects in that. Can you elaborate on that? Are you talking about like dealing with agents and contracts and stuff and different companies?
There's a variety. I mean, there's a variety of negatives, right? I mean, some of it is agents, right? If you're a really elite or highly visible athlete, right, and you're dealing with an agent to help you with these marketing deals, the expectation now from the NCAA, right, is that the agent works with you simply in a marketing capacity and not to market your athletics ability. But I'll be interested to see. I mean, we're coming up on the first draft cycle. I'll be interested to see. It'll happen first in football just because of the way of the draft cycle is, but I'll be curious to see how many football student athletes who are eligible for the draft end up signing with the same agents that represented them for name, image, and likeness. I think that number is going to be pretty high. I think it's going to be a high percentage, and I think that that's going to be, I'm worried that this is going to be a way for agents to kind of get a foothold in with athletes very early in their careers.
Yeah, I was thinking
Which
that
can
same.
be good. I don't know, and agents are not inherently bad. I know quite a few agents. Most of them are good, but it's a very competitive industry. And so for the agents who are trying to break in, they're the ones that tend to take bigger risks, and it can be tricky. you know, I mean, it was a cosmic shift in the NCAA rules, right? So we had to change a lot of our policies, including developing a name, image, and likeness policy, including altering our team rules and department rules and things like that. So yeah, we made quite a few changes to try to support student athletes as they pursue these new opportunities that were not available to them before July 1.
Brigham Young University, their athletic director, Tom Homo, he said that BYU athletes are prohibited from entering agreements with companies that fail to conform with their school's honor code. Does CSUN have do the new measures include any guidelines or restrictions for athletes in terms of the sponsorship companies that they can deal with?
I mean, I think we're just, you know, it's going to be any restrictions that we get will be guided from kind of general counsel, right? I think we're still navigating like potential conflict of interest agreements and if there's any licensing, you know, issues that we have. But I don't think it'll be prohibitions so much as it'll be, you know, as an example, and this is totally hypothetical, but like, you know, if we're, for example, if a student athlete wants to enter into an agreement with Nike, for example, there might be a restriction that says, okay, you know, you can't wear your Under Armour CSUN apparel while you're promoting Nike, right? Which should be an obvious thing anyway, but I think any restrictions that we have would be something along those lines, because Nike would be, you know, a competing brand with Under Armour.
Are there currently any CSUN athletes that you're aware of that have received any sponsorship deals?
Yes, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 20 student athletes that I'm aware of.
Was the school or like any athletic programs involved in the process of them getting signed or no?
No. California law prohibits institutional involvement.
Nebraska Cornhuskers, their athletic department, they partnered with Open Doors to offer 100 players at college in Nebraska deals already to like incoming freshmen. Will CSUN ever like look to partner with any companies or do something similar?
So every school in the Big West has an agreement with Compass to help us with our NIL, with our name, image, and likeness disclosures and education and tracking. I think Compass has plans to expand in terms of, you know, not so much creating a marketplace, but kind of allowing it, facilitating students to reach their own agreements. Okay. But I think we're still seeking guidance on how much institutional involvement the school can have. Right. You know, one thing that I want to just kind of throw out is the couple examples that you've brought up so far, BYU and Nebraska. While we all have the same NCAA rules, we have different state laws.
Right.
And so that's another factor into why some schools are able to maybe offer things or be involved in things that other schools can't. So you just got to factor that in as well.
Okay, I did some research and I didn't see that NCAA like did any specific, or like they haven't put out any specific guidelines or measures on matters. Like,
okay. That's correct.
So, did the NCAA like contact or give CSUN any information on the Big West Conference regarding the change or any?
Not anything that's not publicly available. So anything that you can see is the guidance that I've gotten and every school has gotten so far from the NCAA.
So basically, like to my understanding, they kind of like left every school and every state to deal with it on their own.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which I thought was kind of weird, you know, like.
Yeah, well, you know what happened was, so, you know, the details that went into that was, there were several rules proposals regarding what name, image, and likeness would look like. The schools were all looking at. The difficulty came that the NCAA was hoping to pass all of these rules by June 30th, 2021, because July 1 is when several states had name, image, and likeness laws that kicked in, right?
Yeah.
So they were kind of up against a deadline, and they weren't able to, you know, actually pass any NCAA rule regarding name, image, and likeness. And part of what made that complicated is because we do have so many state laws, the NCAA had to draft a rule that would be compliant with every state's law, which is very difficult to do. So what the NCAA, I think, you know, I mean, I'm sure you could reach out to them and ask them specifically, but I think what they're hoping for is for federal legislation to make it uniform, to make NIL standards uniform, and then they could base the NCAA rules off of that federal legislation, because then it would be the same across the whole country.
Okay.
Until then, you're right. The guidance has just been follow your state's law if it has one.
Personally, I believe that this is a huge win for student athletes, and although there may be some drawbacks and negative effects, their recently acquired ability to profit off their name, image, and likeness is the future of college athletics, and is certain to change the landscape of college sports in a myriad of positive ways. It is definitely exciting to see how this will all pan out. Once again, I am your host, Cesar Saldana, and this has been another episode of Sunny Sports.